Hello, and thanks for tuning in to the Black Country Talking News. This week's edition is the 28th of July, 2021.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by sightloss charity Beacon Centre. A message to our listeners who receive the Talking News on CD in the post. This remains in paper envelopes, so there's still no need to send anything back to us. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, "Alexa, play Black Country Talking News." Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods. Calling 01902 213 210. Visiting our website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website, www.blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcasts, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Black Country Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Simon. And reading this week, we have myself, Rob, writer Graham Fisher, Mina, Ed, Craig, Helen, Nikki, Heather, Simon, Angela, Liz, Christine, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country, we have the quiz with Mina, news from West Bromwich Albion and Wolves, a Did You Know section from Flashback Roger, a feature on Lammas Day, the weather, Craig's Black Country Joke Book, an article from the Macula Society, and rounding all that off, we get to hear from Graham Fisher and his In My Opinion section. But first, we have our Guess the Sound quiz. I'm going to play a sound clip, and all you've got to do is simply guess what it is. So, here's this week's clip. Have a think on that, and Mina will reveal the answer later alongside the usual quiz answers. Now we start, as always, with some local news, brought to us by Angela, Ed, Christine, and first up, it's Liz.
Wolverhampton is bidding to become the UK's next city of culture. Council chiefs have submitted a formal expression of interest to the Department of Digital, Culture, Media and Sport, setting out why they believe the city should be the nation's cultural capital in 2025. Council leader Ian Brookfield said winning the accolade had the potential to fast-track our city's growth, international profile and reputation. The bid has been backed by Cabinet Minister Gavin Williamson, who suggested the idea last month, as well as the city's three MPs and Wolves, the University of Wolverhampton and the Grand Theatre. Mr. Brookfield conceded that the city faced a tough task, as Coventry currently holds the title, and the judges may choose to look for somewhere outside the West Midlands. However, we believe that we have a strong case to make, both in terms of the amazing cultural assets we already have in the city, our bold plans for becoming an event city, and the potential that winning this honour would have to fast-track our city's growth, international profile and reputation. So we are going for it. We have notified the Department of Digital, Culture, Media and Sport of our interest, and we look forward to working with government to be able to submit a full bid. Mr. Brookfield said Wolverhampton was a dynamic city that's going places and added, "We're seeing major investment in our nationally renowned civic halls, fantastic art gallery, wonderful Grand Theatre, a new five-year event strategy to create an event city, which has landed us the British Art Show, more major sporting events, investment in new public spaces in the city centre and elsewhere for live entertainment and cultural events, a fantastic new train station and gateway, part of a multi-million pound transport hub, and much more. These building blocks give us a strong starting point for a bid, and we have already done some work to scope the opportunities of doing this as part of our five-year events work.
More than 350 people are in hospital with COVID-19 across the region, new figures show. Statistics released by the NHS showed 354 beds were taken up by coronavirus patients in the Black Country, Staffordshire and Birmingham as of July 20th. It comes as health chiefs and patients seriously ill with the virus have urged more people to get the vaccine. The data shows 178 patients are currently staying in hospital at the University of Birmingham NHS Trust. That was the highest number in the region. Elsewhere, 46 patients were staying at the University Hospital North Midlands NHS Trust, which runs Stafford Hospital. In the Black Country, the highest number was at Sandwell and West Birmingham NHS Trust, where 65 patients are staying. A total of 25 patients are staying at Wolverhampton NHS Trust, while 23 are staying at Dudley NHS Trust, and 17 are staying at Walsall NHS Trust. Among those in hospital is Umar Ahmed, 31, from Purton, who is seriously ill with COVID-19 at New Cross Hospital in Wolverhampton. Speaking with the help of a ventilator, he has been urging more young people to take up the vaccine. "I was breathing on my own 3 days ago. Now I am needing this help and that help," he said. "It is the most frightening thing I have probably ever experienced in my life." Asked about his decision not to have a vaccine before he became ill, he said, "Right now, if you are healthy and you can and you have been offered the vaccine, just go and get it, because it's not worth this. It is not worth losing time with your loved ones. It is not worth not seeing your family for weeks on end. If two jabs can prevent that, then it is more than worth it."
The demolition of Dudley Hippodrome will represent a missed opportunity to create a top-class entertainment venue in the town, the National Body for Theatres has said. The derelict pile on Castle Hill is set to be bulldozed to make way for a new multi-million pound university park, which council chiefs say they see as a crucial part of the town's £1 billion regeneration programme. Campaigners had been hoping for a reprieve for the 1930s Hippodrome, but their hopes now appear to have been dashed after the council secured £25 million in government funding for the project. The Theatres Trust said it was enormously disappointed, as the site could potentially provide a 1,500 capacity live performance venue that would play a key role in the regeneration of the centre of Dudley. Claire Appleby, the Trust's architectural advisor, said, "With sensitive and sympathetic design, it could have formed a fantastic new gateway to Dudley. While Council is currently exploring a number of other schemes in the borough, none of these are comparable with the Hippodrome. As a purpose-built theatre with a fly tower, a refurbished Hippodrome could take a wide variety of shows and provide an entertainment venue that the town is sorely lacking. There is also no replacement for the memories and evocative atmosphere inherent in historic buildings such as the Hippodrome. This is a missed opportunity to reimagine a building with a strong theatrical history and designed by local architect Archibald Hurley Robinson, who completed over 30 cinemas in the West Midlands, sadly, many of which have also been lost.
Parts of the region will end up becoming no-go areas due to fears over violence and public safety, MPs have warned. The West Midlands has seen a spike in gun crime over the past 5 years, according to new figures from the Office for National Statistics, with 721 offences recorded in the year to March, up 17% from 2016. Only London has a higher rate of gun crime, while West Midlands Police is the only force area in the country to see an overall rise in crime over the past year amid a surge in violent offences. The figures have prompted concern across the region, with Conservative MP Mike Wood calling on Labour Police and Crime Commissioner Simon Foster to stop making excuses and deliver the safe streets that the public deserves. Others have warned that parts of the region were at risk of becoming no-go areas due to fears over public safety. Dudley South MP Mr Wood said, "When every other police force in the country, whether they are urban or rural, is seeing big falls in crime, and we are seeing an increase, the new police and crime commissioner needs to stop making excuses and look at what can be done to reverse this extremely worrying trend and deliver the safe streets that the public deserve." Stuart Anderson, Conservative MP for Wolverhampton South West, said rising violent crime was one of his biggest concerns. "Everyone should have the right to feel safe in the streets that they live on," he said. "It is no good blaming a lack of resources when pretty much everywhere else in the country is able to reduce crime. It shows that there is a serious problem here. We need a stronger police presence within the community. People need to know that the police are taking this seriously, otherwise places will rapidly spiral downhill and end up becoming no-go areas."
More than 150,000 people in the Black Country and Staffordshire could lose lifeline funding as the government prepares to axe a pandemic-inspired benefits boost. Since March 2020, universal credit claimants have been receiving an extra £20 a week to help them mitigate the financial impact of COVID-19. Despite calls to make the uplift permanent, Chancellor Rishi Sunak confirmed recently that it would be scrapped this autumn, as it had always been intended as a temporary measure. The data shows there were 37,608 universal credit claimants in Wolverhampton, with 13,004 in employment, and in Dudley there were 32,266 claimants, with 11,699 in employment. Six former Conservative Work and Pension Secretaries wrote to the government to urge ministers to rethink the contentious cut, which is likely to impact nearly 6 million people in the UK. Sir Ian Duncan-Smith, one of the signatories, said failure to retain the uplift could damage living standards, health and opportunities for struggling families. And charities say permanently boosting the benefit, worth up to around £1,000 a year, would help to provide financial security and prevent households being plunged into poverty. Anti-poverty charity the Joseph Rowntree Foundation described the impending end of the uplift as a terrible mistake that would push 500,000 people below the breadline. A government spokesperson said, "Universal credit has provided a vital safety net for 6 million people during the pandemic, and we announced the temporary uplift as part of a £400 billion package of measures put in place that will last well beyond the end of the roadmap. Our focus now is on our multi-billion pound plan for jobs, which will support people in the long term by helping them learn new skills and increase their hours or find new work."
Now it's time to head over to Helen, who has for us, as always, this week's Beacon Update.
Hi everyone, it's Helen from the Beacon Centre. How are you? Well, I hope. Well, another week's gone by and it's hard to believe we're almost at the end of July. As usual, there's been lots going on at the Beacon Centre. First up this week, we'd like to say a big thank you to everyone who's donated to our Heart of Beacon campaign so far. Your support means so very much to us. As you may remember, we're creating a mural that will display the names of everyone who makes a donation to Beacon during July and August in our centre reception in Sedgley. This will be in the shape of a heart that will grow bigger with each donation in honour of our amazing local community support. If you'd like to find out more about the campaign, head to www.beaconvision.org/heart-of-beacon. That's www.beaconvision.org/heart-of-beacon. And to donate £10, all you need to do is text Heart of Beacon, that's all one word, Heart of Beacon, to 70085, and email your full name to supporters@beaconvision.org so we can add your name to our mural. Don't forget, texts cost £10 plus one standard rate message. Next up is our sight loss tip of the week. So, do you struggle spotting drinking tumblers in the kitchen? If you switch to coloured ones, you may find them easier to spot. If you'd like more sight loss support, why not get in touch with one of our expert sight loss advisors? Call 01902 880 111 to see how they could help you. They'd also love to hear your sight loss tips so we can pass them on to our members. This week is also your last chance to vote for Beacon in Asda's Green Token competition. It closes on July the 31st, so there's still a couple of days left to vote for us one last time. Just head to www.asda.com/green-tokens and select the Asda Great Bridge store and vote for Beacon. It's that simple. And you could help us win £500. Just in case you need it again, the website is www.asda.com/green-tokens. And don't forget to select the Asda Great Bridge store. As always, we would so appreciate your support. Lastly this week, we'd like to say a very special thank you to the Arnold Clark Community Fund, which has awarded Beacon £1,000 as part of their commitment to give back to communities during this challenging time for charities. This funding will help us ensure that we can support people with sight loss when they need us the most, and we're just so thankful. That's it for this week. Hopefully, I'll be back and speaking with you all again soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for the update, Helen. Now we have our next block of local news. And starting us off, we have Christine.
Black Country police buildings could be saved after a review into a controversial closure programme was launched. Oldbury, Wensfield, Tipton and Aldridge are among sites lined up for closure this year under the West Midlands Police Estates strategy, which has seen dozens of stations and bases shut down and sold off in recent years to save cash. Now, Chief Constable Sir David Thompson has announced a review into the programme following a request by recently elected West Midlands Police and Crime Commissioner Simon Foster. Speaking at the PCC's strategic board meeting, Sir David said it was an entirely appropriate time to take stock of where the force is on estates. He said the force was growing considerably as a result of an uplift in officer numbers, which needed to be taken into consideration when looking at available police buildings. The pandemic had also had an impact on social distancing and the agility of the force, he added. Sir David said, I am very conscious that some of our buildings appear to have had some uncertainty over them for a number of years, and I'm hoping with the review we can give some direction on that. The four Black Country stations were originally due to close last year, but the programme was delayed due to the pandemic. None of them have front desks and they are not open to the public. Mr. Foster said, West Midlands Police needs an estate that is fit for the 21st century. It needs buildings complete with the modern technology officers need to do their job and to help to cut crime.
Train services through the West Midlands are being cut due to staff self-isolating. Reduced timetables will be introduced in an attempt to improve reliability after a spate of last-minute cancellations. More than 600,000 people in England and Wales were instructed to self-isolate by the coronavirus app in the week of July 14th. Avanti West Coast is cutting trains from Monday on its routes that link the West Midlands with London Euston, Manchester and North Wales. It will be running two services per hour from London to Wolverhampton via Birmingham New Street and only occasional services to Shrewsbury and Wrexham. A spokesman said this is to manage staff shortages and ensure a reliable service. Thameslink and Southern will also cut its weekday timetables on five routes from Monday until further notice. It warned that further changes could be required, including at weekends. Steve White, Chief Operating Officer at parent company Govia Thameslink Railway, said, "Regrettably, we've had to make the difficult decision to reduce some weekday services. Unfortunately, like other industries across the country, coronavirus continues to affect our operations. We have fewer colleagues available at the moment, due to a significant increase recently in the number of people affected by COVID-19. Our colleagues have continued to work tirelessly throughout the pandemic and we're really sorry for any inconvenience caused by the latest changes. By bringing in a reduced timetable now, it will help reduce short notice cancellations and give customers more certainty. We strongly advise passengers to check before they travel, including at weekends."
A service station's plan to build a new restaurant facility to help boost trade have been thwarted over concerns about the loss of greenbelt land in Dudley. Planning officers at Dudley Council have refused to grant permission for the erection of a new two-storey building next to Himley Road service station following a number of complaints. Residents and ward councillors said that the 44-seat restaurant and takeaway was inappropriate development on the greenbelt, while other issues such as lack of parking and the location being an accident black spot. Petrol station bosses said the development was needed to sustain the fuel business. Councillor Anne Millward said, "I have grave reservations concerning this application. Firstly, it encroaches onto the Greenbelt land and therefore would set a precedent and goes against the council's own planning policy. Protection of the Greenbelt is an extremely emotive subject." In their application, the petrol station management said, "It is important to increase the service facilities to the fuel station in order to sustain the economic feasibility of future fuel sales. The garage management team have decided to close the original car wash area as well as the car servicing facility. Therefore, the management have decided to add this restaurant slash takeaway facility to the range of services to the existing convenience garage shop. But planning officers agreed with the objectors and have refused the proposal."
More than 100 e-scooters have been seized by police across the West Midlands as officers continue to crack down on illegal riders across the region. West Midlands Police took action in response to concerns raised by members of the public around users breaking the law and putting others at risk. Between January and June this year, the force has seized 106 e-scooters, while an operation in Birmingham City Centre on Monday saw officers seize a further 14. In June alone, police seized 6 e-scooters in Wolverhampton, 4 in Sandwell, 3 in Dudley and 1 in Walsall. 33 were seized in Birmingham during June. E-scooters are legally available to buy, but it is currently against the law to ride a privately owned one in any public place across the country, including roads, parks or pavements. The only place a privately owned e-scooter can be used is on private land with the landowner's permission. VOI e-scooters being trialled in Sandwell, Birmingham and Coventry are legal but only to ride in places where people can ride bicycles, such as roads and cycle lanes. They cannot be ridden on pavements. Campaigner Sarah Gayton, Street Access Campaigns Coordinator for the National Federation of the Blind of the UK, has asked anyone thinking of riding or buying an e-scooter to think again after incidents involving private and rented scooters. Ms. Gator said the serious incidents were the tip of the iceberg and said both young and older people had suffered life-threatening injuries while riding e-scooters across the country.
Dudley's sprawling new university park will enable people to receive a top quality education without being saddled with huge debts, Lord Austin has said. The former Dudley North MP said the £36 million campus, which is being built on land off Tipton Road, would transform the gateway into the town centre. And he said it would give young people in the region the option of accessing degree level qualifications without having to get into debt by attending traditional universities. The University Park, which is being run alongside Dudley College and the University of Worcester, will provide higher education courses for the health sector and life sciences. It will also host the Very Light Rail Test Centre and the Black Country and Marches Institute of Technology. It was given a major boost earlier this month when the project received £25 million from the government's Towns Fund. Lord Austin, who campaigned for a university campus when he was an MP, said he was delighted to see the scheme move forward. He said, "Dudley College is already the best college in the country, but the new university park will give 5,000 local people the chance to get degree-level qualifications and proper apprenticeships, better jobs and earn more money, hopefully without being saddled with huge debts like at traditional universities." It will help the local NHS train and recruit more nurses, support staff and technicians to look after the rest of us, support local businesses and enable us to attract new investment, new industries and good, well-paid jobs in growing high-tech areas of the economy, as well as regenerating a site that has been derelict for 50 years and transforming the gateway to Dudley. The park is scheduled to open in autumn 2024 and has been backed by Community Secretary Robert Jenrick, who visited the site last week. Dudley Council leader Patrick Harley said he expected the project to continue at pace now that funding had been secured.
Now it's time for our regular mental workout, as we have Mina with this week's quiz questions.
Hello and welcome to the Flashback Quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, here are your questions. Are you ready? Question 1. How many varieties of watermelons are there? Question 2. Which country hosted a huge bikini parade? Question 3. What is the summer equivalent of making snow angels? Question 4. What is Juno the goddess of? Question 5. What did Thomas Wall start to do to save his summer workers' jobs? And question 6. What are ice lollies called in America? As always, I'll be back to reveal the answers later in the show, but for now, good luck!
Thank you for those questions, Mina. I'll give those some thought. Coming up next, we have some more local news, brought us by Liz, Ed, Christine, and first up, it's Angela.
A Wolverhampton pensioner has called out for help from the City Council to stop people fly-tipping near his home. Sonny Campbell has made the appeal to Wolverhampton Council to take action to stop people dumping rubbish on the land near his home on Sutherland Road. The 88-year-old said the fly tipping has been going on for nearly 3 years, but had got worse during the last few months. He said, "I've seen sofas, fridges, freezers and even bathtubs dumped on the land nearby, with someone dumping 5 sofas on the road just last week. The council have come over and removed things in the past as I explained to them that I was unable to get out of my garage, but people have just come back and dumped more things on the roadside." Mr. Campbell said he thought that the fact that Sutherland Road was a secluded cul-de-sac meant that people thought they could get away with it, and said he wanted to have a camera installed on the telegraph pole outside his house. "I just want something to happen to stop this mess, as I've paid a lot for my wall and my garden, and I want to be able to live here without dealing with this mess." Councillor Steve Evans, Cabinet Member for City Environment at Wolverhampton Council, said, "We take fly tipping seriously and are happy to work with residents to help catch those selfish, inconsiderate people who do it and cause neighbourhoods to look unsightly." While the council places CCTV based on intelligence and suitability, we will always encourage residents to contact us with information about those who commit fly tipping to enable us to prosecute. Where we have cleared areas before, they're often filled with rubbish and waste again soon after, which is very frustrating. Which is why working with others, residents and local police, to capture evidence and get eyewitness accounts helps us to take formal legal proceedings.
Supermarket giant Aldi looks set to open a new store in Dudley, which will help create dozens of new jobs. Planners at Dudley Council are currently considering the proposal to demolish Eggington's Chemist on Abbey Road in Lower Gornal and an empty unit on Zor Street to make way for the development. As well as a new store, a separate pharmacy will be constructed to replace the one being demolished. The development will also be partly built on an existing park, as well as scrubland which used to home a pub demolished a number of years ago. If approved, Aldi said the store will create 40 new jobs in the area, as well as around 100 during the construction phase, and operate Monday to Saturday from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Sundays. In the application, Aldi said, The constraints of this site demand a carefully detailed scheme which respects its location within a local centre, but also recognises the influence of a parkland setting affecting part of the site. The proposed development will strengthen the retail mix within Lower Gornal, increase food store provision, and help meet the retail needs of the resident local catchment area by enhancing consumer choice in accordance with sustainability objectives.
A Wolverhampton MP who founded Wolves Tech Aid watched as 25 laptops donated by international NGO United Sikhs were handed over to help pupils at St Luke's Primary School. The locally based project was set up to help tackle the city's digital divide in education, and the laptops will be used to help pupils catch up on learning that they have lost during the past year because of restrictions and the COVID-19 pandemic. Sun Kaur from United Sikhs joined Pat McFadden, MP for Wolverhampton South East, and the Wolverhampton Football Club mascot Wolfie to watch over the official handover. Wolves Tech Aid was formed earlier this year as a partnership involving Wolverhampton City Council, Wolverhampton FC Foundation and the Black Country Chamber of Commerce, with the aim of persuading local businesses and individuals to donate new or used laptops. The equipment is then recycled for educational use and donated to help those pupils without access to computers at home. Pat McFadden MP said, "I'm enormously grateful to United Sikhs for making this fantastic donation. This is the biggest donation yet to Wolves Tech Aid. It is really important that children don't lose out in education because they do not have the right equipment or good Wi-Fi connection at home." Wolves Tech Aid was founded to help tackle the digital divide that exists, and donations like this will make a big difference. Sun Kaur of United Sikhs said, "The digital divide is a growing concern, and we hope that the 25 laptops that have gone to underprivileged children will allow them to flourish in their education." United Sikhs prays that by providing these laptops to children, they are able to fulfil their dreams and head towards their dream jobs and careers.
German-owned sustainable engineering firm ThyssenKrupp Materials UK could triple its workforce in Cradley Heath over the next 3 years. It invested £4 million in the new facility at Cradley Heath in July last year to house its fabrications services, which produce tailored aluminium and stainless steel products for customers across the construction, architecture and engineering industries. Additional investment is planned for the site, predominantly to install the latest cutting technologies such as new saws and CNC machines. Marking the firm's third facility in the West Midlands, the site was operational by October, despite the challenges posed by the coronavirus pandemic. During this period, the business underwent a merger, bringing together its aerospace and materials divisions under the ThyssenKrupp Materials UK brand to improve operational efficiency and utilise resources across various industries. The investment in the fabrications facility followed a robust business case for the manufacturing of balconies. With the aerospace industry facing challenges as a result of the pandemic, ThyssenKrupp Materials UK diversified its product line to apply its in-house aerospace expertise to the fabrications arm of its business, retaining a number of high-skilled jobs in the area. The firm currently has 30 employees who work across the machining and assembly lines while developing new projects at the same time. There is potential for the company to triple its workforce in the next 3 years, creating opportunities for 24-hour production across the factory.
Neighbours in Albrighton created a pop-up store to raise vital funds for the village's first responders team. Two kind-hearted friends have raised more than £1,700 for the Albrighton and Cosford community responders after creating their own pop-up shop at the end of their drives. Tracy Cooper and Nikki Poole came up with the idea of using unwanted household items to deliver a boost to the three-strong team of medically trained volunteers that have attended more than 1,000 calls in the last 10 years. Using social media to advertise what they had to sell, the duo managed to raise a staggering amount of money that has been used to partly fund the new response car and vital equipment to save lives. Tracy explained, "The responders treated my father when he was in distress, so I wanted to do something that would help them maintain the excellent service they provide for the village. I heard about them raising money for a new vehicle they could use and thought the easiest way we could raise cash was to hold a kind of garage sale at the end of our drive in the village." She continued, "My honest hope was to get a couple of hundreds of pounds, but we were at that target within a few weeks, with local people really responding. I managed to get my kids to donate toys they didn't want, and then I asked Nikki if she could help with manning the store and in finding more items for us to sell. All Brighton and Cosford community first responders used the money raised by Tracy and Nikki as part of a successful £30,000 drive to purchase a BMW X1, chosen due to its reliability, ability to cross rough terrain, and the option for it to be modified to store crucial equipment such as defibrillators, monitors, oxygen, and airway management aids."
Next up, we hear from Nikki, who asked for us a piece from the Macular Society.
"Hello, I'm Nikki, and here is a posting from the Macular Society's webpage called Support with Technology Has Been a Lifeline During Lockdown. When Sheila retired as a training consultant for a software company 4 years ago, she wanted to spend her spare time volunteering. After many years in the same role, she made a promise to herself that she would never teach again or do anything related to IT. But when the pandemic hit and some of her face-to-face volunteering roles came to a stop, she soon found herself rethinking her decision. She said, "It suddenly seemed extremely selfish to not use the skills that I have when there were so many people out there who were isolated and needed to communicate and their only option was technology. Sheila signed up as a Connect by Tech volunteer for the Macular Society, offering one-to-one telephone support for technology around the home. Our Connect by Tech volunteers help people with macular disease make the most of any devices, from smartphones to smart TVs and tablets. She began by answering questions on Apple products, but is now providing support for a range of technology, including televisions and low vision aids. I'm sighted, that's my big advantage," she said. "I can advise on pretty much anything because I can do the research to find information. Someone with a visual impairment may not know where to go, or even if they did, may not be able to pick through the detail. I'm happy to help." Talking about the support she provides, Sheila said she gets a lot of satisfaction from the role. "Some people you call are in a complete state of panic. They start by thinking they won't be able to do it, and I get so much satisfaction from hearing them calm down and realise they can. It's not an insurmountable mountain for them to climb." She added, "As they grow in confidence with one thing, they grow in confidence in other areas. They feel more confident in themselves, and that gives me an immense satisfaction that the little things we've done has spilled into other areas of their lives. It's a great project to be involved in." The Macular Society's network of Connect by Tech volunteers are on hand to answer a whole range of challenges, which could include anything from "How can I get Alexa to find my favourite music?" to "I want to surprise my daughter with a video call on her birthday." No matter how big or small the challenge, they are here to help. They can also assist with using other useful web-based services, such as online shopping, reading recipes, and listening to audiobooks. Thank you to the Limbury Trust, which has generously supported the work of our Connect by Tech service, which provides vital support to people living with macular disease.
Thanks for that article, Nikki. Now we have our final block of local news. And starting us off, it's Ed.
A time capsule has been discovered beneath the plaque which marked the official unveiling of the former Woodside Library in Dudley in 1894. However, despite the exciting find by workers of Holland Contracting and Conservation Limited, the company responsible for dismantling the historic building, the capsule has refused to unveil its contents. Now the glass container, which appears to hold copies of newspapers and documents, has been sent to the Black Country Living Museum for specialists to open. Woodside Library is currently being taken down brick by brick and is to be rebuilt as a dramatic centrepiece for the new 1940s to 1960s Black Country town at the museum. The land for the library and Woodside Park was donated by the Earl of Dudley in 1890 and was previously the site of the Earl's large Woodside colliery. The library played a huge role in the lives of many people of Dudley, and by transferring it to the museum, it is hoped that not only will this salvage the architecture of the building, but also help retell the story of the community it served and the people of the Woodside area. West McGowan, the 32-year-old recorder for Holland Contracting and Conservation Limited, has the task of identifying every brick of the historic building and ensuring that they are put in the right place when it is re-erected at the museum site. He said the task is like a giant jigsaw, and we also hope to use brickwork and items from the old fire station which used to stand next to the building as donor parts. The finding of the time capsule is exciting, as it has been there since 1894. However, there are no maker's marks on the glass container, and we have found it impossible to open. Because of this, we have sent the capsule to the museum, where it will be opened in due course, and where we expect it will go on display.
Western Park will host an international model air show this year in September, organisers have announced. Set in the Shropshire countryside in the grounds of the 15th century stately home, covering over 1,000 acres, the Western Park International Model Air Show is now in its 26th year and has established itself as one of the foremost model shows in the country and holds its own on the world stage. The show attracts visitors and pilots from all over the world and continues to grow year on year. The event, which was cancelled last year due to the pandemic, is due to go ahead this year from September the 3rd to the 5th. Organisers say Western Park Air Show International has now grown to be the largest event of its kind in Europe, attracting visitors from around the world. There will be stalls, entertainment, displays, fireworks, live music and a fun fair. Tickets are available online or at the gate. Visit westernparkmodelairshow.co.uk or phone 01952 587 298.
A Black Country music venue has postponed its reopening due to rising COVID cases. The Robin 2 in Bilston has rescheduled its live shows for after the new opening date of August 18th, despite the last 16 months of closure being horrendous. The venue has already had to delay its reopening before this summer. Owner Fraser Tranter described the situation last month as disastrous. He said at the time, "People forget how long this has been going on. We shut last March and haven't traded since. It's just disastrous. We've suffered at the hands of a pandemic. We need a fighting chance to get open." The Robin 2 published a post on Facebook saying, "To all Robin customers and live music lovers, the management of the Robin R&B Club have took the hard decision to delay our opening. We have been closed now for 16 months and it has been horrendous. However, with the drastic surge in confirmed cases, the increased hospital cases, alongside the problems caused by the pingdemic, we at the Robin have made the decision to reopen the venue on the 18th of August 2021. The reasons behind this, in all that we do here, at the forefront we have a duty of care to our artists, our staff and certainly our customers. All shows shall be rescheduled. Sorry for any inconvenience. The Robin R&B Club."
A special memorial has been unveiled to recognise the work of all the past mayors of the Dudley Borough. Councillor Anne Millwood, the current Mayor of Dudley, and Alderman Melvin Mottram unveiled the commemorative stone, which features the names of mayors throughout the years who have died. The stone has been paid for with charitable donations from elected members at Dudley Council and now stands in the Mayoral Memorial Courtyard at the rear of Dudley Council House in Priory Road. Councillor Millwood said, "Being mayor is a hugely privileged position and provides so many opportunities to meet some incredible people working in thriving communities. I hope this tribute goes some way towards highlighting that work and gives staff and elected members somewhere to reflect on how fortunate we all are to live and work here. The names of all 26 mayors of Dudley who have died are on the stone, which has been produced by D&G Memorials, dating back to when Dudley officially became a borough in 1974. The courtyard also features a bench with a dedication to all former councillors and officers of the council who have served the borough with distinction. Alderman Melvin Mottram, former councillor and mayor of the borough, came up with the idea and has worked tirelessly to raise funds for the memorial over the past 2 years. He added, "We have had some outstanding mayors who have dedicated their lives to public service, but sadly some are no longer with us. The work they did and the people they were should be remembered by everyone, and this commemorative stone does exactly that."
A primary school has given a special send-off to two members of staff who have retired together after 30 years of service. Deputy Head Teacher Eleanor Thompson and Teaching Assistant Cherry Williams enjoyed a surprise assembly at Stone Lawn Primary School in Bilston and were presented with gift vouchers and a bouquet of flowers. Pupils at the school in Green Park Avenue made a song and video for them to mark the occasion, and all of the 320 plus pupils contributed to a book of poems made in their honour. "We were very lucky with the weather and it was not too hot," said headteacher Kate Charles. "We have not had an assembly here for 18 months due to COVID, and we wanted everyone to have the chance to say goodbye. Eleanor and Cherry really enjoyed it. They have both taught the parents of children who are now with us. It was important for us to celebrate their retirement, as they have made such a contribution to the school." Miss Charles said gardening is something they would both enjoy during their retirement. "We will miss them terribly in September," she added.
It's time once again to hear from Flashback Roger, who asked for us some more amazing facts.
Hello everyone. Well, we've had some glorious weather during the past week, and I hope that you haven't got too uncomfortable and overheated. Well, there's a few cooling items to think about this week, so I'll just press on and say, did you know that? There are more than 300 varieties of watermelon. The Watermelon Board says the most popular kind are seedless and seeded and mini watermelons, all of which have the pinky red centre. But there are yellow and orange watermelons too. And the largest bikini parade took place on August the 19th, 2012, in Hulidao City, China. 1,085 people donned bikinis for the occasion, and the length of the parade stretched a staggering 1.1 miles. A rerun was considered, but the participants all declined, as it was suggested it would be in the winter. I wonder why. And we all know what snow angels are, but what about sand angels? The record for the most people making sand angels at once is 1,387. The event took place on June the 10th, 2017, on Stearns Beach in Lake Michigan. They set a world record that day, officially making it into the Guinness World Book of Records. And the summer months owe their names to Roman times, as June gets its name from the Roman goddess of childbirth Juno, while Julius Caesar gave his name to July, and the Emperor Augustus gave his name to, yes, you guessed it, August. And Wall sausages date back to 1786, when Richard Wall opened a market stall. His company grew, making pies and sausages, but always had to lay off workers in the summer when demand fell away in the hot weather. In 1913, Thomas Wall hit on the idea of making ice cream to make up for poor meat sales in the summer. It wasn't until after World War I in 1922 that his idea went into production with instant success. And lastly, as we're talking of cooling things, ice lollies, or popsicles if you're an American, first appeared by accident in 1905 when a glass of fruit juice became frozen on a windowsill one winter. It's assumed that a boy left the glass with its stirrer in place, so I think, as they say, all the rest is history. Well, reading this week's Did You Knows has made me quite hungry, so I think I'll have some hot dogs later, and if I need cooling down, I'll have me an ice loll. Whoa, I wonder if they still do frozen jubblies. They used to last ages. Anyway, I'm off now, so I'll leave you those thoughts to chew over and say bye for now. Ta-ra a bit. Ta-ra.
Cheers for those great facts, Roger. Now we head over to Mina, who, as always, has a weather update for us.
The weather for this week starts off cloudy but settled, but as the week progresses, wet conditions will make an appearance. Temperatures will be steady throughout the week, hovering typically around 20 degrees. UV levels are expected to be moderate throughout the week. The sunrise and sunset times are 5:30 a.m. for the sunrise and 8:58 p.m. for the sunset. Now for Friday 30th of July through to Monday 2nd of August, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 20 degrees. On Tuesday 3rd and Wednesday 4th of August, we have light rain showers and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 21 degrees. And finally, on Thursday 5th of August, we have light rain and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 21 degrees. So that's your forecast for the week. As always, enjoy the weather.
Thank you for that weather update, Mina. Now we head over to our Sounds of Nature feature.
The Canada goose is our largest goose and maybe our most familiar. They are common birds across most of the country, nesting on park lakes, flooded gravel pits and reservoirs. As their name suggests, Canada geese are not native to this country, having been introduced from North America about 300 years ago. After the Second World War, they spread across the UK, becoming pests in some areas because they congregate in large numbers and can cause damage. The Canada goose is a large bird with a black neck and head, grey brown back and white cheek patches.
This recording was made by Lawrence Shove and was made available by the British Library. Up now with the latest football news from Wolves and West Brom. Wolves have played two friendlies in the past week and enjoyed their first win of the Bruno Lage era last Saturday, as Patrick Cotrone fired home late on to give the visitors a deserved 1-0 win over Real Betis in Cadiz. Bruno Lage made just two changes from last weekend's defeat at Crewe, with Joao Moutinho and Romain Saiss replacing Fabio Silva and Max Kilman in the starting lineup. New signings José Sarr with Yerson Mosquera, along with the returning Ruben Neves and Semedo, were amongst the 15 named substitutes. Betis started brighter of the two teams, with Wolves sloppily giving the ball away on a number of occasions, Taylor Perry and Ryan Aidenouri being the chief culprits. Wolves were dealt an early blow, with Willy Bolly forced off early with an appearance of a left hamstring issue. That meant Kilman coming on to replace the Ivory Coast international, and it was the substitute who almost had an immediate impact, heading over from close range. Morgan Gibbs-White then put through Raul Jimenez through on goal, only for the linesman to raise his flag, but replays suggest it was a poor call, as Wolves finished the half the better side. Lage then made three changes at the interval, with Sarr, Neves and Semedo coming on for John Ruddy, Perry and Moutinho. Wolves looked to press higher up the pitch and were more threatening from the off. Wolves took the deserved lead late on. Kundal with a wonderful ball to the advancing Semedo, who ran with authority and aggression down the right before delivering a pinpoint cross for Cotrone to side foot home. The Italian has been consistently linked with an exit, but maybe a new lease of life from Lage could result in the forward staying at Molineux. José Sarr calmed any late nerves as Lage enjoyed his first victory as Wolves boss. Monday saw a topsy-turvy affair in Marbella as Wolves continued their summer schedule with a 3-2 loss to Las Palmas. As new boss Bruno Lage looks to get his philosophy across, they scored two lovely goals through Kijana Hoover and Morgan Gibbs-White. Defensive errors, though, were present throughout as the Spanish second-tier outfit prevailed at the Marbella Football Centre. Both Ael Garcia and Alberto Peñaranda made Wolves pay for switching off before the break. Lage and Pack picked things up in an attacking sense in the second half, with both Hoover and Gibbs-White finishing in style. Those goals, though, came either side of a Jesse Rodriguez strike on the back of another mistake, as Wolves failed to follow up their 1-0 win over Real Betis. Ultimately, there were some encouraging attacking moments, and Mosquera, the only player to enjoy a full 90 minutes for Wolves, was thoroughly impressive. Larger, though, be keen to tighten things up before the Premier League season starts. Wolves return to England in a couple of days ahead of friendlies at Stoke and Coventry on Saturday and Sunday, respectively. West Brom, meanwhile, continued their solid pre-season with a credible 0-0 draw with Premier League side Watford in an exciting encounter at Vicarage Road. Grande Dean Garner came closest for netting for the visitors, whilst Ismail Assar and Dapo Mabud guilty of wasting a number of opportunities for the Hornets in a game that deserved more than a goalless scoreline. Ismail once again shaped his side in a 3-4-3 formation, with the boss naming arguably his strongest side of available players, barring Matheus Pereira, who is expected to depart this summer. Dara O'Shea took the place of Cedric Kipre in the starting lineup, with no other changes in the 11 from the 2-0 win over Sheffield Wednesday. The start didn't offer much of a pre-season feel to it, with Ismail instructing his side to press the Premier League opponents high up the pitch. Albion's start was energetic, but it was Watford who saw the first big chance of the game fall their way after catching the visitors out with a long ball over the top. Kyle Bartley was beaten in a foot race by Cucho Hernandez, who found his opposite wing Assar in the centre of the 6-yard box, but the wideman's strike was tame and trickled wide through a goal kick. It was then Albion's turn to show a lack of sharpness in front of goal, after Connor Townsend's brilliant ball found Dean Garner alone in the middle of the penalty area, but his attempted lob was claimed easily by ex-Albion goalkeeper Ben Foster. Albion threatened several times with wide balls into the host's box, but the first header to truly trouble the Hornets came just after the half-hour mark, with Carl Bartley seeing his attempt to go marginally offside. It was a feisty encounter, summed up by Dario Shea's challenge on Hernandez, rightly earning the young defender a booking, and also gifting the host a glorious chance to level from a following free kick. The host started the second half much sharper, as they looked to break the deadlock. The first opportunity came to Saar, as he broke through on goal, only for Jake Livermore to put in a pinpoint challenge for which the referee rightly waved away Peels for a spot kick. Dapo Mabud then should have opened the scoring only to fire wide, before David Button was called into action to save smartly from Saar. Both sides then made a raft of changes over the second half, as they looked to provide opportunities for the rest of their respective squads. Callum Robinson came closest to scoring for the visitors in the second half, but his low strike well saved by substitute goalkeeper Rob Elliott. The visitors finished the brighter of the sides, but couldn't find a way through a well-drilled Watford backline to find a late winner. Up now, we have an article from Heather, all about Lammas Day.
Hello, I'm Heather, bringing you an article about Lammas Day. Many years ago, when farming was one of the most important forms of work in this country, August the 1st was known as Lammas Day. Not many people now realise the importance of the day, which was an annual celebration of the first grain harvest of the year. The word Lammas itself means loaf mass. On August the 1st, farmers used to cut the first sheaves of corn or wheat from which seeds were ground into flours to produce the first loaves of the season. Four stalks from the sheaf were wound into corn dollies and presented alongside the bread as hope for a good harvest in the coming year. If a harvest festival was to be held, a harvest loaf was brought to church to be blessed. Nowadays, however, many harvest festivals are held later in the autumn, often in September or October. Lammas falls at the highest point of summer, between the summer solstice and the autumn equinox, when usually the weather is at its hottest and the earth is dry and parched. Also, at this time of year, gardens are full of warm coloured flowers, such as sunflowers, dahlias, alstroemerias, pinks, globe thistles and lilies. Gardeners know them as hot colours, full of red, orange and yellow blooms, instead of the so-called cold colours, such as different blues and whites, which have been seen earlier in the year when the weather was colder and the sun was at its weakest. Fruits such as plums, blackberries, raspberries, cherries and crabapples are also harvested at this time of year. Around now, we also see an abundance of runner beans, tomatoes, artichokes, cucumber and lettuce, ready to be harvested, and some of them will be offered up at a 1st of August harvest festival with the Lammas bread, making it a true celebration of the first harvest of the year.
Thank you, Heather, for that article on Lammas Day. Coming up next, we have Craig and his Black Country Joke Book.
Hello, I'm Craig. I'm going to tell you some jokes from my Black Country joke book. A Black Country lad arrives home after fishing on the cut and tells his dad he's caught a whale. Boston, says his dad, where is it? The lad replies, I chucked it back because it's all rusty and half the spokes are missing. Here's another one for you. A sizzly chap asked his mate in the pub, what's a monsoon? His mate replied, it must be a bloke who's nearly 18. And finally, I've been told crocodiles can go up to 15 feet, but they've never seen one with more than 4. I'm Craig, and that was my Black Country joke book.
Thank you for those jokes, Craig. And coming up next, we have Mina with the answers for this week's quiz.
Hello, and here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Are you ready? Question 1. How many varieties of watermelons are there? And the answer, 300. I didn't know that. Question 2. Which country hosted a huge bikini parade? And the answer here is China. Question 3. What is the summer equivalent of making snow angels? And the answer here is sand angels. Question 4. What is Juno the goddess of? And the answer here is childbirth. Question 5. What did Thomas Wall start to do to save his summer workers' jobs? And the answer here is, oh, I like this one, produce ice cream. And finally, question 6. What are ice lollies called in America? And the answer here is popsicles. How did you do? Brilliantly, I hope. But if not, there's always another chance to have a go next week. Now, did you get the answer to guess the sound question that Rob asked at the start of the show? Here's one more chance to hear it before I tell you the answer. The sound you just heard was a recording of a spinning coin. Now, to end this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, we now head over to Graham Fisher for another edition of In My Opinion.
Hello. Whilst outward appearances may be superficially masked by a fashionable social patina of the day, the underlying health of a society can be gauged by the collective state of its institutions and social mores with an accuracy that Sherlock Holmes might have affirmed as not conclusive, but certainly suggestive. Consider, for example, the burgeoning of weight-watching associations in the UK, the USA, and elsewhere in what we refer to as the Western world. Nothing wrong with that. Who am I to say I couldn't do with losing a few pounds myself? But compare and contrast with the numerous third-world countries that, through diverse causes from drought to locusts, are perpetually on the brink of famine, and what is hard-pushed to find any commensurate growth in slimming clubs. Or nail bars. And dare I include those catering for the vanities in alternatively tanning and bleaching intimate parts of the anatomy, etc., etc. Well, I rest my case. And that case is, to express it crudely, the extent to which we are exercised by or actively in pursuit of matters that, to others, might be considered shallow, even inane, is conversely a reflection on the inherent strength of our society. No great risk of famine, no immediate threat of war, no sign of pestilence on the horizon. Until recently, that is. we can afford to indulge ourselves because, as former Premier Harold Macmillan told us in 1957, slightly paraphrased, you've never had it so good. Not to say we are bereft of ills and misfortunes. Far from it, they are there, albeit hidden by that patina that, once buffed away, may reveal a catalogue of discomfiture. It is how we address those ills that may promulgate our success in society's development, bearing in mind that progress should not be confused with a step in the forward direction. Key to this progress is the usage, and even more important, the accurate interpretation of language and its meaning. The current idiom, Black Lives Matter, is as curious as it is disquieting, since the logical implication of the statement itself is that at some prior point to the catechism, they did not. These three words alone suggest a discourse that is not only a damning critique of what has gone before, but which also raises future issues of relative values. Lessons will be learnt, is the usual platitude. Very little seems to change any time soon, appears to be the reality. Ah, who of my generation doesn't recall the I'm Back in Britain campaign of 1968? Hardly a direct comparison, but illustrative nonetheless. Aimed at boosting the British economy, it became a nationwide movement within a week, but interest quickly flagged amidst much embarrassment, and the campaign is now regarded as an iconic example of a failed attempt to transform British thinking. So, if any movement is to entertain hope of lasting impact, it must be commensurate with values, expectations, and realities by acting as both a reflector and conductor of a universally desirable set of objectives. It must also, and this is crucial, be delivered in such a way that the message received accurately represents the message sent. It is on this latter aspect that it must be both stated and interpreted correctly and consistently. In this regard, we have much to learn from philosophical deliberation, and there is one philosopher in particular who springs to mind in encapsulating its significance. There is a tale about the university scholar who was appraising a student and his PhD thesis. The assessor wasn't particularly enamoured by PhDs, considering them a USA import that had no place in UK academia, so was a trifle jaded from the start. His verdict ran along the lines of, "This thesis is a work of true genius." It also happens to satisfy the criteria for a PhD. The recipient of this glowing backhanded tribute was one Ludwig Joseph Johann Wittgenstein, 1889 to 1951, and the subject of the genius epithet was his remarkable Tractatus Logico-Philosophicus, published in 1921. At the time of its publication, Wittgenstein concluded that the Tractatus had resolved all philosophical problems, and he retired from philosophy for many years until realizing he had more to offer. His subsequent philosophical investigations, in which he recanted many of his own earlier assertions in Tractatus, did not appear in print until 2 years after his death. At a mere 75 pages, Tractatus is considered one of the purest distillations of thought ever produced. An aim of the Tractatus is to reveal the relationship between language and the world, by which Wittgenstein argues that the logical structure of language provides the limits of meaning. A central tenet is his assertion, if my schoolboy German is up to it, "Wovon man nicht sprechen kann, darüber muss man schweigen," which translates as, "Whereof one cannot speak, thereof one must be silent." What does that mean? Well, facts and logic are exactly so and can be described. Anything beyond these, religion, ethics, aesthetics, the mystical, cannot be rashly discussed and instead require the invocation of feelings, emotions, or experiences. They are not of themselves nonsensical, but any statement about them must be, because they cannot be proved or disproved. This view was concurred by his mentor Bertrand Russell, who felt that since he could neither prove nor disprove the existence of God, he saw no need to even contemplate the question. Russell wrote the introduction to Tractatus before he and Wittgenstein developed differences of opinion and became mutually fractious. The limits of language, for Wittgenstein, are the limits of philosophy. Hence, without apparent hubris, he considered Tractatus to be the last word, and effectively said we should all pack up our bags and go home. Until he reconsidered. In a different life, as a much younger man, part of my daily routine involved presenting principles of accurate and unambiguous communication. Recall the days you played Chinese whispers in the school playground when send reinforcements, we're going to advance, magically became send three and fourpence, we're going to advance, and the problem is self-evident. So, how to avoid? My introduction to Wittgenstein came as a breath of fresh air, and though I'm not alone in finding his works too challenging to tackle head-on, for anyone other than the most gifted student he's all but impenetrable, a heavily edited familiarisation with his basic paradigms, collated by those able to survive the scrum, has proved singularly illuminating. According to Wittgenstein, language works by words being translated in our brain, not by textual recognition, but in the form of pictures to which we can relate. The issue is how that picture may vary between the transmitter and the receiver. So, should I tell my other half that I've been chatting in the pub with a young lady, I would need to ensure that my entirely innocent exchanges with an office colleague I met there by chance were not misconceived as a clandestine meeting with a secret lover. Or, as we would say in the vernacular, quite literally, she might get the wrong picture. Indeed, she might. Philosophical investigations marked a radical departure from the picture's interpretation, where Wittgenstein instead referred to games theory, in which he postulated that the mind translates aural input into a series of games we use or manipulate in order to translate the messages. So, if I were to say to my other half, don't worry, it'll all be okay tomorrow, that simply cannot fall within the game of deductions based on fact, since I cannot accurately predict what is going to happen tomorrow. What I'm instead playing is the game of reasonable expectations based on previous experiences, which is a completely different gambit, but with wildly different potential consequences. This is very much a volte-face from his earlier work, but such was his brilliance he claims adherence to both, and is still a major influence in contemporary philosophical debate. Check out YouTube for lectures by, say, A.C. Grayling or Julian Baggini, two modern masters of distilling esoteric academic postulates into digestible brain food, if ever there were, and take it from there. It's fascinating stuff. But it is most certainly not just for the aesthete or connoisseur, and we dismiss such considerations at our peril. Throughout history, conflicts have arisen over misunderstandings. Even the mythical Trojan War was essentially based on a dubious premise. Was Helen of Troy abducted, or did she elope? Wittgenstein alluded to weighty considerations that impinge mightily on our own existences. Of course black lives matter, but by what convoluted strands of warped historical imperatives did we arrive at a position of having to expressly state so? And wherein lie the inbuilt attributes that do not require us to remind ourselves that murder, theft, child abuse or violence are all wrong. Unlike our compliance with imposed constraints of, say, commercial regulations or taxation, we should be cognizant by dint of our collective humanity under common law when such as the willful taking of a life or the oppression of our fellow man are universal wrongs. In a democracy, the people vote for leaders to act by proxy on our behalf. They in turn create the parameters within which we express our views. And how fragile those parameters can be. Remind me, please, how are things in Hong Kong at the moment? Thus the need for a precision of thought that is underpinned by universal egalitarianism. There is another aspect that must be factored into our equations, and that is our predilection for opinions and bias which are changeable with time and may, unfortunately, spill over into a panoply of isms. Ingrained beliefs may be difficult to modify, despite the strongest counter-argument. They may be suppressed, only to re-emerge when the moment is propitious. As the aforementioned Harold Macmillan is reputed to have once remarked, when asked what was most likely to knock governments off course, "Events, dear boy, events. No one saw the coronavirus pandemic coming, and Brexit has, for the moment, taken a back seat. In the meantime, largely but not exclusively fueled by events beyond our shores, we are witnessing a period of civil unrest and widespread malcontent, some peaceful, others not so. One can but hope that by the time we recover some semblance of virus-free normality, this bubbling anger may have muted towards more considered dialogue in which it is acceptable to all that a productive line of address could be established by first levelling the table. I am not convinced there is a global movement for any section of society, be it based on colour, race, religion or sexuality, to be treated more favourably than any other. It is, I contend, more accurate to suggest they would simply all like to be treated the same, to partake in the same game, to be part of the same picture. And I cannot pass by the irony of my musings here being recorded as a podcast, for, as broadcaster Clive Anderson astutely observed during an interview with the Mail Online in 2011, radio is like TV, but the pictures are better. Perhaps therein lies true acumen.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!